I've been thinking a lot about how to introduce this this young man here sitting next to me, and I almost feel like, you know, just hearing all the different shout outs of love, seeing the number of people that showed up today, is really just been a testament to who Ashish is. And I kind of want to let his story tell you a little bit about who he is, but just, you know, in a quick sentence or two, you know, Ashish, just beautiful, loving human being, one of the original visionaries, founders of Charity Focus, which is now Service Space today. And, you know, from the outside, you know, you'd see, you know, he lives his life, got a beautiful family, goes to work, but there are so many little things that happen, you know, whether it's in his daily life, things that have happened in his past, that will just lays quite a bit of wisdom on you. Even just this morning when we were doing our own circle of sharing, he's got this beautiful ability to be able to take what everyone's saying, synthesize it, and then create a new sort of onset of wisdom. So really looking forward to this call. And so, Ashish, thank you for being here. Wanted to just start off with a question about when you were growing up. And you were a top student in school. You were also a little bit into heavy metal music and goth culture. Well, am I off base on that?
No, you're accurate.
And so, you know, considering that, what did spirituality mean to you growing up? And how is your relationship to that changed as you've grown up?
You've definitely done your research, haven't you? But first, before I say anything, I just want to say I'm very honored to be in this space and to have this opportunity to speak to you all. I think you guys are so inspiring, very authentic in your own journeys, very genuine, and I draw a lot of inspiration from you guys. So thank you for this opportunity for me to share what little I have to share. But yeah, when I was a kid, I was actually a very rambunctious kid, a very stubborn, very strong-willed. Was into heavy metal. I used to go to rock concerts. Had long shoulder-length hair. I used to blast my favorite bands, the Metallica, Anthrax, and which is another one I forget. It's been a while, but I used to blast music in the house. But all through the, when I reflect, it almost seems like another life. All through that, I remember there was a constant presence of loving kindness in every moment from my parents. Not a single instance in my growing years have they raised a voice at me. Have they, like, you know, corrected me in a rough way? Only love. And I have a lot of gratitude to both my father and my mother for being a loving presence. Like, I used to blast music and they would not even say anything. They would go out and buy me more CDs. Right, I'm like, okay, you want Iron Maiden? Okay, I'll go out on a rainy. I would be like, Mom, I want this Iron Maiden cassette. And it's raining. She'd go out in the rain, and she'd go buy that cassette for me. How could one not be overwhelmed with gratitude when you have not just one day, 2 days, but an entire lifetime of that loving kindness? So to me, that's the core of it, right? That's my center, right? I draw from that every day. And it's a challenge for me to kind of have that same loving kindness and pass that or pay that forward to my kids, right? So it's interesting, like, spirituality initially, to going back to your question, was wrapped around the framework of religion. When I was growing up, there was a strong foundation of religion, once again, thanks to my parents. But over the years, that understanding of the universal elements of what religion contains, right, of peace, love, compassion, and then realizing that's not really tied to Hinduism. I mean, it's present in all religions. And then associating myself with those universal values rather than a particular religion is what kind of inspired me, right? So I think coming to the Bay Area and then meeting Nippon and meeting folks in Venice meditations and getting involved in, you know, service and volunteering allowed manifesting those universal values, and it didn't have anything to do with religion. So kind of my understanding of spirituality slash religion has evolved, and it still continues to evolve to this day.
So that answers the question. So I guess sort of speaking to, you know, Nipun, charity focus, kind of, how did you get involved? I mean, you were working at Sun Microsystems, I believe, at the time, and so what was your reaction? You came across this, and kind of tell us a little bit about that journey and your journey with
Nipun. Yeah, it was an amazing time back in the late 90s to be in the world where, you know, every place we go, people talked about the stock market going up and making the next billion or whatever. And ironically, I had been part of a group which is starting an investment club in the Bay Area. And it happened to be on a Wednesday night when we gathered at a person's house to discuss a portfolio of investments. And there happened to be a gentleman who needed a ride back home. And I was a bachelor, didn't have anything to do after the meeting. I was like, yeah, I'll give you a ride, you know, in Sunnyvale. So we got into the car after the meeting and we started talking about what our interests were. And pretty quickly we realized we both had shared the common interests of meditation and, you know, spirituality. So this gentleman says, you know, hey, you know, why don't you come to my house? You know, we just have this thing we just started a couple of weeks ago where our family just sits and just meditates. And we sit around the dinner table. I said, sounds good. Dinner sounds good. Meditation is good. I have nothing to do. And the gentleman is none other than Nipun's dad, by the way. So we walk into the home. And if you guys have been to Nipun's house, it's a big center island. And there was Nipun, his mom, and Guri. They were like, and Manish, there were four of them sitting there. And I walk in and I look at Nipun and I'm like, I've seen this guy somewhere before. Because back in the days, Nipun had, I think, shaved his head and he had this poet hat on, just like a different looking hat, you know. I'd seen this guy on the campus of Sun Microsystems, which is where I worked. Like, I've seen you somewhere. And he's like, where do you work? And then we quickly found out that we worked in the building next to each other at Sun, right? So that's where we kind of first met, there's a lot of events I could recount, but the most memorable events are then we started doing the Sites Wednesday meditation on Thursday evenings at 4 p.m. We used to hop into Nipun's car, and we used to drive to Berkeley, which is about an hour away, and Viral was studying in Berkeley back then, so from 5:30 to 6:30, we would meditate at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery. Then from 6:30 to 7:30, we would go to the Vedanta Center, and there would be just one person who would chant. It would be an empty room, but it was very powerful. And then we'd go to Viral's house and meditate, and in between grab a snack or something. So that was like a monastery hopping experience. But it was in one of those rides, you know, we were constantly having conversations about, like, you know, what is the meaning of what we're doing, of technology, and how can we make a difference? And everyone was like, we should just make websites for people for free. We're like, that sounds like a great idea. Let's sign me up, you know. So it began there, and then, you know, Nipun had two jobs, basically. He would work full-time at Sun, and his real job would start at, like, 6 or 7 in the evening. He'd sleep at, like, 4. He'd do all this charity-focused stuff, which is now known as service space, in the night. It's so much energy, right, as you guys all know, and the ability to kind of pull people in. So kind of long answer to your question, but that's how it kind of all, I was telling Virju, it just happened to be in the right place at the right time. So I'm very fortunate to be there. So.
Thank you. So that's great. You know, when you were with Charity Focus, you guys were doing the monastery hopping. I know one of the things you guys did was a book club.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I think it was about a dozen of you or so that went to go meet a certain Zen master, mm-hmm. Les K.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about his impact, because he's been a big influence in your life.
Yes. So funny story to share about Les K. I randomly turned on my TV 2 weeks ago. and this was a documentary, right? And the first thing I see in the documentary is Les Kay, this person whom I admire, on the TV screen. And this documentary is about Steve Jobs. Like, what? What's going on here, you know? And Les Kay is walking in his monk garment and is walking. So I was like, wow, I have to see this. And sure enough, Steve Jobs knew Les Kay because he went to Les Kay's monastery in the 70s. And Steve Jobs himself was going through a phase when he had come back from India and was questioning a lot of, you know, what's the meaning of everything and trying to bring simplicity to things, right? So Les Kay was talking about his interaction with Steve Jobs. It was inspiring to me on many levels because I have always valued a sense of balance in my life between work and spirituality or service, what you might say, in not preferring any extremes. And Les Kay, I think, did it really well because he spent, I think, 30 years juggling a career at IBM while being, you know, a monk in a monastery, kind of the head monk. So he's always inspired me. But there's a story I can share from the book club. So we had started reading books, and so one of the ideas that was floated around was, you know, why don't we read books where we can actually meet with the authors? So we read a book, and then we meet the author, and we ask questions. And Les Kay had written a book, Zen at Work, which we all read. And so we had approached Les and said, you know, can we meet with you after we read the book? And he was like, sure, sure. And Saturday looks good. And he marked it on his calendar. So we were all excited. Like, and we all went up there on Saturday, 2 o'clock. We were all sitting there in his monastery. There's the small Zen garden, but there's nobody there. It's like the monastery is locked up. And I'm feeling embarrassed. You know, we set this up and there's nobody there. Thank you. And this lady comes by, I think, to pick up something at the monastery, and I ask, you know, do you know where Les Kay is? She's like, I don't know, but maybe he's at this other place where they're trying to build this new monastery. It's just 2 streets away. So I hop in the car, I drive to that place, and sure enough, Les is there, like, digging in his, like, you know, he has an old pair of overalls, like, which is, like, all paint stuff on it. You can tell it's, like, you know, for his, you know, weekend labor type work stuff, right? And you see a bald man, like, doing the stuff. I'm like, Les, how are you? He stops and he looks up, and he's this 60, 70-year-old gentleman, right? Zen monk. And he's like, he takes a second, looks at me, like, trying to remember. I said, we had a meeting at 2 o'clock today. That's his reaction. He just pauses, you know. I said, that's no problem. I think you guys are doing something important, but, you know, we'll reschedule, right? He says, no. And he had like 10 people working on a project. He drops everything, hops into the car, and spends the next 3 hours with us. And Viral was the one who was like, guys, you know, this guy is in the middle of a project. Let's be mindful that we don't take him away from what he's doing. But he sat with us. He said, I'm here for you, fully here now. You know, let's go. And he dropped everything that he was working on, literally. And he entertained our questions for a couple of hours. That was very inspiring. So, what was the question again?
Seeing how his impact is and just, you know.
There's a whole bunch of other stories. I'll share another quick one. I was going through a time in my life where I saw being very kind to someone, and that person was taking advantage of the situation. And I was trying to rationalize that, you know, how to respond to that. So the meditation sits at the monastery start at 5. So I'd gone at one of the 5 o'clock sessions, and they have something called the Doku San. I think that's what it's called. Basically, you can sign your name up, and the monk will come and tap you on your shoulder. Then you have to wait a few minutes, and then you go out, and he'll be waiting for you outside. You can ask him your question, and it's a small, tiny room that you can go into. So I wanted to ask this question to Les. Once again, it happened to be a Saturday, and I just randomly showed up there at 5 o'clock. But it happened to be one of those Saturdays where it was a full day retreat, like this retreat. So he's got a full agenda, right? I didn't know that, right? So I go up and I sign up my name, you know, like I have to ask this question to Les today. And I sit, and sure enough, he comes and he taps me on my shoulder. And I didn't know back then that you have to wait a few minutes because he goes back, he lights an incense, he gets ready. So I just go and get up and start walking. And he's being very patient, and he goes into this little room, and he's not talking to me, he just sits down and sets everything up. So I start talking, right? I said, I have this question for you. But I said, I don't know how much time you have. He says, I have all day for you. That's how he starts off, you know, like what? Because he could see that I was troubled. And sure enough, after 30, 40 minutes, I ran out of my questions, right? But for someone to have that kind of initial natural response was very powerful. So I have a bunch of other stories, but I'll stop here.
thank you.
Thank you.
So I know, you know, it's wonderful hearing all of these inspiring stories, but, you know, as it is with life, you know, we also come across difficult times in our life. And I know that one of the tougher times was when your mom passed away. And now I've never met her, but I've heard stories about how much of a compassionate individual she's been. And whether it was helping, you know, her maid's children with homework or just giving everyone with love. And so if you had to share some life lessons from your mom, what would they be?
I take that. Yeah, that's definitely my mom and my dad both have been kind of real source of inspiration for me. And it's very simple, you know, there isn't anything mystical about it. And it's just that manifestation of loving kindness. And she always had it turned on, right? There wasn't an off switch, which is what like blows my mind away, right? It's just, I can't fathom it. So, and that to me is some goal that I strive for, is to be that loving kindness for my children or to anybody that we run into, right? So that is the biggest lesson I've learned from her. I mean, there's so many instances that I can share from you. I shared a few already, but she's always been there and always kind of guided me in a very soft, gentle way. She always picked moments where if there was a kind of a tense moment, she would not say anything, but bring up a response after a few days, right? When there's a more willingness or space to absorb what she's trying to say. So a lot of, you know, that credit goes to her and also to my dad for always being there and always kind of supporting me in a loving, kind way. So very simple. There's nothing fancy to add to that.
That's great. And just for those of you on the phone, we're actually very, very lucky because Ashish's father is here and he's spending the day with us, meditated with us this morning and shared some fantastic stories. And so we've had some firsthand insight into the type of environment and the loving care that Ashish is in.
I want to share a story. So I was maybe 6 or 7 years old. Was, you know, big into kind of flying kites, I guess. So I stole money from the house, and I went and bought a kite. And it's called a manja, like a thread. And my mom used to keep money, like, out in the open. It wasn't hidden or locked up anywhere, right? So I just took some, and I knew where it was. Obviously, she found out because she knew that it was less. And she, through her social network, she found out that I went and bought this thing from this lane there, this shop there. I don't know how she did it, but she found out. And she told my dad, and little did I know what's going on, and I'm happily, like, they don't know. So my dad sits me down that evening and talks to me about Swami Vivekananda and the value of being honest. And in a very calm way, it hit me so hard. It still stays with me. And after that day, obviously, I never took anything. I always asked. And he always keeps saying, you know, this is all for you anyways. Like, what's there for you to take? It's all yours. Right? So these are little things that, you know, just transform you right away. Like, there's no struggle or no, like, you should be doing this. It's like, no, it's like, listen, this is all yours anyway. So it just stayed with me. So
that's actually a really nice segue to Madhu's question about raising children,
yeah.
raising mindful children, you know, thinking about all the things that you learned from your parents, from your own experiences. You know, you have a wonderful wife, two beautiful little daughters, but kids are a challenge.
Yeah, kids are very challenging.
And so, you know, how are you trying to raise your children? What kind of values are you trying to instill? And when in doing so, what are some of the practices that you take into experiences you've learned?
Yeah, that's a great question, and always reflecting on that and trying to learn and evolve. I'm definitely nowhere close to where my dad or where my mom were, but I'm constantly learning. I don't think there's an one thing, but there's a lot of little things that, you know, I think make a difference. A few examples, right? Like, Manal always has the video of the week that she shares with the kids every Thursday or one of the days of the week. So it's some clip from KarmaTube or something she'll show, and she'll have a dialogue with both of them. And we do that every week. Every month, every 2 months, like, I go onto kiva.org and have my daughters pick out whom they want to give money to, right? So we have a portfolio, and they'll pick, like, you know. And I think somebody had asked me when I shared that, like, what logic do they use? And I was asking Anha, like, you know, how do you pick this person? And she always looks for the person who has $0, like the person who has the least money. Like, they rank you based on, like, how much you've collected. Kiva is a microfinance organization where you donate $25, and it goes to the entrepreneur directly. And then it comes back to you, right? And then you reloan it, basically. It's actually one of Nipun's friend, Premal Desai, had started it. Small world. So we do that. You know, the other thing I realize is I also try to consciously talk about principles and how, you know, rather than, you know, if you have a challenge, rather than just solve it, talk about a broader principle. Like, for example, you know, she'll be struggling, and I'll be struggling with a math problem. You know, I'll of course help us with that. But I'll try to tell her that, why don't we break something big and complex down into small, simple parts, right? And if you look at it that way, things look differently, right? So I always try to take a step back and talk about, you know, breaking things apart. Or, you know, she had one day, she was standing on the stairs and she's like, and I'm not going to have dinner, you know. And me and Manu look at each other and like, where did she get that from? Like, you know, she's never done that. I was like, Anha, what happened? Where did you, let's talk. This is surprising. Like, that's what I saw in this XYZ movie, you know? So I was like, okay, great. That's where you got it from. Okay, so that's where we kind of introduced the concept of filters, right? And I try to always tell her, like, you know, you'll see and hear and, you know, do certain things, but always use your filters, and you are try to tell up those filters to realize what's right, what's wrong. If you're not sure, come check with us. So anytime we have this episode, we go back, step back, okay, what does your filter say, right? And so we have these concept filters. So like, I tell her, if you want to watch a PG-13 movie, you have to prove to me that you have the right filters on, right? And then you can show me that you're, you know, doing the right thing with that. So that's an evolution as well. So these little things we do, I also, in my internal realization, I realize that as a human being, I want them to be happy human beings. And it's a tough world out there, right? And we are made up of, you know, our spiritual beings, our physical beings, our mental beings, and our emotional beings, right? This kind of, I hate to compartmentalize it, but all those elements of our beings are fully tested in the real world, right? So if I go to work, even though my work is based on compassionate values, not everybody is following those values. And so being a service-minded person can be perceived as a certain different way. So you have to cultivate the values of, you know, being a mindful leader or being assertive sometimes. So you have to balance those two things very carefully. So how do you teach those values, right? So for me, it's trying to, you know, spark the interest and development of my kids in all those four realms. So we try to get them involved in, you know, I talked about the spiritual realm, but we try to get them involved in the other realms as well, right? So we have some activities around that. So we try to, you know, do that, those things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what I found works is they're very good at mimicking or copying. So what you do and how you behave with them is what sticks the most, right? So it's all about being the change, right? So if I say that, oh, no, I cannot have these chips, if I'm chomping on the chips, you know, it doesn't work, right? So it's, at the end of the day, it boils down to that, right? So.
You know, one of the things, even though I'm not a parent myself, I'm a very active uncle, I like to think of it. And I can't tell you how many times I've learned, you know, just little different things from a child that's maybe 3 years old or 5 years old. I remember a conversation I've had with you in the past. You had shared a story. I think that, you know, one of the girls was on the stairs and coming up. And
I
so
like
I think they have some very powerful set of stairs here in this house. It's always going up. I'm going to give it to Ashish to tell us some of those stories.
Yeah, I think kids definitely, as you read in the quote today, seeing is an act. They are kind of so present that they see things like that we don't see, you know, and they see things as they are. Like, I'll be driving and I'll miss, like, my turns, right, which I have to take, and my four-year-old will say, Dad, you missed the turn. But she knows that this is the path, and she's awake and alert to the present moment. And I think the story that you, maybe not everybody knows this, but I was working with Anha and trying to get her to do something collaboratively, and I said, okay, Anha, it's a team effort. We have to do things together. You know, why don't you take these pair of socks and, you know, put them upstairs in their room? And I spelled out team to her, right, T-E-A-M, and there's no I in team, right? Like, I don't want to do this. So. And she stops and she looks, you know, okay, I'll do it. And then she takes the socks and she takes a few stairs and she stops and she says, you know what, Dad? I says, what? But there's an I in Ashish. So like, that hit me. You know, I think, I don't know if she meant to have it as a pun, but like, it was like, yeah, that was pretty intense. I think just being around kids grounds you in a very real way in being present, right? They come in with a rush of joy and energy, which you don't have any choice but to be pulled into the present moment. And so it's just being in that space, as you've experienced with infants, it's just... And with a pet, right, with Sadie, a dog, same way. They're just present right here, right now. So it's a blessing to be around them and share that space with them. So
I feel like I could go all day here with questions, but it's time to kind of move on to the Q&A portion of our call. And so if we could switch over to that, Rahul, and for those of you that are on the call that have a question, thank you. For those of you that have a question for Ashish, please push *6, and you will jump into the queue. And just to kick things off, we have a question here from somebody here that's sitting with the group. Okay. And that question is, you practice meditation pretty regularly. And so if someone was to simply ask you, you know, what does meditation mean to you, what would you say to them?
And definitely have my own view of things. There's so many different ways to describe it, but that understanding of meditation itself has evolved for me. The image that stays in my mind is, you know, of a glass filled with water. It has some mud or dirt in it. And if you were asked to separate the dirt from the water, and if you're given a spoon, if you try to stir that up, you're actually going to make it even more murkier. But the only way to separate it is to let it stand, right? So the gravity kind of pulls the heavy particles below, and then, you know, pretty soon you have the clear water, which is clear, and then you have the sedimentation, which is at the bottom. And I've come to realize that just sitting itself allowing those natural forces, I don't know what those forces are, allows clarity to arise, and a lot of the unconscious elements kind of subside. So success in meditation is not about counting X number of breaths or, you know, being able to achieve a certain state, but just being able to be and letting nature do its work. And I didn't realize that till, you know, I've practiced over the years that it is more about getting out of the way than doing something, right? So it's difficult to explain, but that's how I'd explain it. So.
And again, for those people on the phone, if you have a question for Ashish, star 6, and you will jump in the queue. And in the time being, we do have a question over here on our side. So star 6 if you're on the phone.
Hi, Ashish.
Hey.
This is Birju.
Where are you calling from?
Far away. So you have a pretty unique career path. I think you've thought more about how to align your values with your job more than most. I'd love to hear you share reflections on now. What are the ways that you're pushing yourself towards that alignment more and more with such a large portion of your life in the workplace?
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't say more than most, because you are a good example of that, Virgil. Yeah, I mean, for me, the journey has been, like, you know, when I did a lot of the charity-focused service stuff, you'd come home and, you know, from a day's worth of work, you'd do charity-focused stuff, and you'd question, like, you know, what have I done in the day that has made a difference in someone's life? And once that seed is planted, it, trust me, you know, that grows like a weed, and then if you've been at a job for many years, you start questioning that even more strongly. And so there came a point in time when I wanted to explore the possibility if I could combine, you know, making a living and making a life, as Mark Alvin said, and combine them into one, if it's possible at all. So I took a step back, you know, I went to business school, explored healthcare, because I felt that was one area where, you know, you're always serving someone. And, you know, tried doing a startup where we wanted to build kind of a video messaging platform for seniors, for whatever reasons, you know, it didn't work out. But it opened an opportunity for me to join a healthcare organization right now that's focused on providing care to seniors and children in their homes. It's a home healthcare agency, and the organization's core statement is compassion, excellence, and reliability. So it has, in some sense, allowed me to align myself and my values by, you know, joining an organization which you can see each day you're trying to make a difference. That said, I would like to caution people that it's not, you know, all that glitters is not gold, right? You may see something that's written on a mission statement, but you won't find that it's pervasive everywhere within the organization, right? So just a word of caution to do your homework and research. So I'll find at work there'll be a few people, especially the founder, the very grounded in these values, but there'll be a lot of other people around him that are not, right? So it's an interesting world out there, but that remains a constant challenge for me to be true to myself and trying to make sure that I continue to manifest those values, even though people around me may not, some of them may not.
I mean, just for context, can you let us know what it is that you're doing in this healthcare
company? Yeah, so the company is called Bayada Home Healthcare. It's been around for about maybe 30, 35 years. So I work in the business technology realm. So I help, I work for the CIO of the company. So work with the service officers that are actually providing service to the clients understand what their challenges are in trying to use technology to help them do a better job, to better serve their clients. I can go into more specific projects, but I'll put half of you guys to sleep. But that's what I've been doing, you know, for the last year now at this company. So,
I think we have someone on the in the queue.
Yes, like Madhu and Meghna.
Hey, Madhu.
Hi, I think this is Meghna actually for this for change.
Hi,
I had a question. I remember when we had Reva, I had a talk with Harshida Aunty, and she told me a very beautiful thing. She said, a daughter teaches you detachment. And I don't know if I'm really feeling that intensely yet, but I'm starting to understand what she's trying to say. And that reminded me about a conversation I had with Mana around 4 years ago. I remember visiting you guys, and she told me that the reason you guys moved that side was because I was very close to Princeton, and once Anha grew up, she wouldn't have, if she wanted to go away, you would have a pretty strong reason for her to stay there, because Princeton was just right about there. My question is, how have you been feeling that detachment? How has that experience been with you?
I mean, that's a loaded question. I think, I don't know, I've never thought about detachment in that sense. You know, if you ask a father how the daughters are treating you, they usually give a lot of attention. So I'm not sensing any detachment right now, but I think I can see that from our Indian cultural perspective. It's when, you know, daughters get married, they kind of, you know, give the daughter away to the other family, and it's, you know, that's where a lot of sense of detachment comes. I kind of sense that. But honestly, I've one of the things I've seen in my life is you think too far enough, and it's, you land completely somewhere else. So it doesn't make any sense for me to do that. So I haven't reflected on that question, and perhaps I should, but for now I'm kind of just enjoying the moments with my kids and not sensing any sense of detachment as yet. Sorry, Meghna, I don't have an answer for your question.
That's okay. I'm confused myself. Thank you.
I had a question for you around, what are you doing right now in your daily life? Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about, you know, especially with the service space ethos of small acts of kindness, generosity. How are you practicing that on a daily basis? How are you growing outside of, say, meditation or this work that now aligns with your values? Because, you, I mean, life's busy, right? You have a family, you have work, there's a lot to do. The girls you're running with are running around with that. And so how are you finding time to do that? And what are you doing?
Yeah, I think my biggest pilgrimage for the last few years has been to make sure my dad's in a good space, and that's been most of my time. We had a life event that happened a few years ago, and I lost my brother in a very, very bizarre circumstance, and that's taken a huge, huge toll on the family. And just trying to ground ourselves back into a sense of feeling normal. I don't think things will ever be normal. It's taken a lot of time and energy and commitment on many, many levels, which I cannot go into details right now. But that's been the core of my life for the last few years. So that's been my pilgrimage, still continues to be.
It's often a debt that can never be repaid with trying to serve even our parents. So it's wonderful. So anyone on the phone, or if you want to jump on the queue, that's star 6. And I think we have someone else that's in line next.
Thank you. Thank you, Amit. That's right, star 6 and 1. That gives you the magical power to ask the question. Thank you. Ashish Bhaiya, thank you so much. Really deep. My question is something I thought that I've been churning for a long time around the personal responsibility. what in your experience, in your evolving experience, in your life insight, what do you think would, I know it is, you know, our personal responsibility towards our parents. It is, I came to a realization that, and our scriptures talk at length, that it is probably a lifetime is not possible to pay back the gratitude and pay back all that our parents do to us. But what in your opinion, from your experience and your insight, what are some of the personal responsibilities we can do to get us close to that point of fulfillment and satisfaction? Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's different for every different person, right? Where they are in their own journeys with their parents. But I think once their heart is filled with gratitude, the answer is right in front of you. It's joy in serving. There isn't kind of a boundary where, okay, this is where I stop serving and this is where my responsibility starts. It's, for me, it's that overwhelming sense of gratitude, which is like there. It's always there. It's always going to be there. And so that question does not arise in my mind that, you know, where the boundary lies and what the personal responsibilities are, what should I be. It's very clear to me. So for me, these, you know, I don't have any confusion in that matter, for sure. But I sense from your question, I'm understanding is, like, you're not sure of what actions make sense for you, right? Is that what you're trying to ask?
That's part of it, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm guessing you're not single.
Wow, you're bingo, right on.
So it's an incredibly complex maze of relationships that we have to manage and work through and, you know, try to be compassionate in all realms. And what has really helped me is just meditation, being grounded in spirituality and not reacting in from a negative space, and always trying to find a wholesome answer. And it's a constant delicate balance. Every day it's like a new challenge, right? So my response to you is just to ground yourself and go back to kind of where you know, that inspiration to, you know, be with your parents, to serve your parents' lives, and work through that maze and through your intuition and come up with answers for your own personal kind of journey. And that's the best I can tell you without knowing any more details, but I'd be happy to share more if you ever need to reconnect.
Thank you. Thank you. I love it.
And again, for those of you on the queue, *6. Or for those of you who want to get into the queue, it's *6. So another question we have is, you know, coming to this idea of looking at charity focus, and now it's, you know, grown into service space. And, you know, even though, you know, the organization's evolved over 13 years and, you know, there's a number of members all across the world. But the basic values have sort of stayed the same, and that's often difficult. As an organization grows, and you know, those values even seem to get stronger because as the collective sort of broadens, you know, it's bringing more people to that. I guess what's been your sort of response in watching all of this evolution occur? Because you were there at the very beginning, and you're still here now, which is wonderful. And so seeing that evolution, if you could share and give that perspective, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, I kind of moved from California to New Jersey thinking everything would be the same, but realized very quickly that the same set of people, the activities, the inspiration that's manifested here right now is not here, right? And to go at it alone is not easy. So we started doing Wednesday meditations. We had one or two people coming and then zero, and then we stopped and we started again. And so I really admire Nipun and his his journey to be able to draw and inspire so many people. So moving from California, seeing Charity Focus and being like there, and then, you know, coming to the East Coast and then all of a sudden feeling kind of disconnected, was a sense of loss, you know, for sure. And I feel that in some sense, this is coming back together now in this forum here. And I'm very grateful that I'm seeing some of those kind of older gatherings of community where we share inspiration with each other coming back here again. So in terms of evolution, I think I, you know, definitely I remember the conversation I had with Sunil, Nippon, Guri, and Viral. I think we were in a room, and Matt, when we were just six of us, and we were like, yeah, let's just keep it small. Let's just build a few websites. We want to focus on the quality of our experience rather than just, you know, doing hundreds of websites. But Nippon was, no. I mean, we've met so many inspiring people along the journey. We've been able to inspire other people. Let's keep marching on. And he's been relentless in this kind of inspiration journey, right? And a lot of things have manifested out of this, which I think is very powerful, right? And it's an act of lighting more candles, right? So you keep lighting other candles. Like, you know, you guys are a great example of, you know, the seeds that have been planted and the service that you guys are providing, right? And inspiring all of us here. So I just see this growing, and the values, in fact, are not being diluted. They're just being, you know, spread in a proper way. So I'm very thankful to be reconnected again through you guys. So thanks for this opportunity again.
Thank you.
Rahul?
Yeah, I've got a question. So Ashish, from everyone that I've spoken to who knows you really well, they all talk about how deeply rooted your equanimity is, and that's certainly something I can sense every time I've been fortunate to be around you, and even much more so on this call. So I was kind of wondering what challenges your equanimity at work, or if you've had an experience where your equanimity at work has been challenged, and how you've dealt with that challenge.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm going through a phase right now at work when a very senior person in my work had made a certain promise when I started work. And upon fulfillment of my obligations, the promise was to be delivered. And sure enough, a year had passed and I had done all that I had to do. I delivered and the promise has not been fulfilled. And that has, you know, obviously posed a challenge to me. So I'm actually in the middle of this challenge right now, and the response I've had is to collect my thoughts and formulate a response in a non-confrontational manner through various advocates within the company, right? So I'm going about it without reacting in anger, but I'm not saying nothing, right? Not like just sitting back and saying, okay, I'm going to be peaceful and let it go, right? So it's been about a month or two in the works. I don't know what the outcome will be, but you know, always constantly going back to the leaders and kind of making my case and giving more logical, thoughtful arguments. It's like, you know, when you have a rock and you try to hammer it, it's on the 100th time the rock will break. You know, even if something does not materialize right now, I feel that, you know, there'll be a realization that, you know, what happened, what was promised, what happened, and what was the response. And that cycle is what I'm trying to establish so they know that next time, you know, they couldn't just make a promise and get away with not fulfilling it, right? So it's a challenge in terms of being mindful and not reacting strongly, but it's a great opportunity to practice. So there's this very, not famous, but very popular guy called Ajahn Sumedho, I think. He runs one of the monasteries in Thailand. He has a quote saying, "My suffering is my practice," right? So if it were not for these episodes in my life, where else would I practice equanimity? What's the use of equanimity if you don't get to practice it, right? So that doesn't mean you go out there and bang your head against the wall, but there's enough opportunities in our lives to practice this. So I continue to grow in that journey, and I continue to try to practice it. I don't know what the results will be, but I'm definitely learning as I go.
And, you know, for those of you that are on the phone, if you could actually just see Ashish, I mean, we've been throwing some curveballs his way, you know, bringing up his past, you know, his Metallica, Anthrax, Pantera days, you know, to some challenges, in the past, and he is just smiling the whole time while he's answering, and he's got a group of about 20 people just staring at him, and he's just smiling away, so that equanimity is wonderful. Ashish, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
It's been wonderful, enlightening. I'm just going to pass it to Audrey, who's going to kind of just recap the call for us, and then after she finishes, we will do a minute of gratitude, and then we will close off the call for the week.
Thanks, Amit. Wow, that was really powerful and calming in a way to hear all your stories and reflections and lessons, Ashish. It's actually really neat to be sitting here and just reflect on all like the little jewels of life that I feel like I've just experienced through your eyes. And I really loved what you mentioned about the filter with your daughters, or teaching your daughter about the filter. And I see it also in the way you share your stories, the way you have come to filter the world in this really sincere and wanting to serve type of way, and in really sincerely facing those challenges and seeing how can I both balance that that desire to serve with the also strength to not be taken advantage of, or not have it be misconstrued in the wrong way, like to keep the space pure. And I also loved the discussion and the questions around just giving back to family. I feel like there's a really strong rootedness in your connection with your family, and it's really inspiring to see that, and the way that you have received all the lessons from your parents and the way that you pay it forward to your children. It's beautiful to listen to. I'm kind of just at a loss for words now. So I guess we can close with a moment of silence for the call. So thank you all for being here and sharing the space.
So a minute of silence, a minute of gratitude. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for joining the call. Thank you for helping collectively hold the space, and tune in next week for some more inspiration. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ashish.